It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed, it is hump day, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, Kim Munson. That's MONSON.com. All of our show recaps are there, and we've got an amazing show planned for you today. In studio with me is Cody Hubley, a millennial. You are part of our writer's circle. We are starting a writer's circle, and on a monthly basis, you are writing an op-ed. Your op-ed is going to be on the website later today. We'll be pushing it out via social media, and it's really an important piece. It's about this plastic bag ban, and I can't wait to talk with you about that. So that's segments 3 and 4. Cody, it's great to have you here.
Thanks. I am blessed to be here among friends with you and Steve.
Well, it's our honor. So thank you for being here. Big show planned. Like I said, we talk about these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Ultimately, socialism comes down to force. You can vote your way into socialism, but it is tough getting back out of it. It's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property or freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something's a good idea, Steve, you don't need to have force to implement it.
Absolutely. And, you know, to kind of maybe help drive that point home, I've got some audio here, a little bit, short piece, and it's mystery to you. You haven't heard it yet, but well, at least you haven't heard it lately. And then you're to guess who the speaker is.
Oh, boy. Okay, Cody. We're
but I, for one, resent it when a representative of the people refers to you and me, the free men and women of this country, as the masses. This is a term we haven't applied to ourselves in America. But beyond that, the full power of centralized government, this was the very thing the founding fathers sought to minimize. They knew that governments don't control things. A government can't control the economy without controlling people. And they know when a government sets out to do that, it must use force and coercion to achieve its purpose. They also knew, those founding fathers, that outside of its legitimate functions, government does nothing as well or as economically as the private sector of the economy.
There you go.
Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
That had to be early. Do you know when what speech was that from?
I could go nail that down, but obviously it's in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. The first time I heard it, I just about jumped out of my chair. It's like, Ronald listens to our show.
Well, that's great. Thank you for finding that, Steve. And thank you to the team, to you, to Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all of your hard work. And to each of you listeners, thank you. You each have a purpose. Strive for excellence today. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. And engage in conversations out there. And it's really important because we are in a great battle of ideas, Cody Hubley.
It's true.
Yeah, so we need to engage. For our inspiration and wisdom today, I went to James Madison Jr. I didn't really realize he was a junior. He lived to 1751 to 1836. He was an American statesman, lawyer, diplomat, philosopher, and founding father who served as the fourth president of the United States from 1809 to 1817. Okay, he said, "It will be of no avail to the people that the laws are made by men of their own choice. If the laws become so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent, then they cannot be understood. If they be repealed or revised before they are promulgated, or undergo such incessant changes that no man knows what the law is today, or can guess what it will be tomorrow." And that's James Madison. Thought that was pretty important. And you know, that whole point about laws being so voluminous. And, Cody, we're probably going to have at least 600 new bills that will be introduced during this legislative session. I have to ask you, do we really need another law? I think we've got plenty.
You got to get back to how this country was founded, what the framers of the Constitution intended. You know, it wasn't about taxes. It was about freedom. We should be getting away from laws and letting people live their lives.
I think there is a shift moving back towards that, but we have to engage in these conversations. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we do this show every morning. So
you did say shift, not shift, because I had enough of shift to last me the rest of my days.
Yesterday, huh? Okay, Steve, are you ready for the funnies?
Yeah.
Is Google male or female?
Good question.
Female, because it doesn't let you finish a sentence before making a suggestion.
Oh, burn.
Okay, let's jump in here. I think one of the first things that I wanted to go to was the Jefferson County, this is from KDVR, mm-hmm. The Jefferson County Detention Facility released 21 inmates Sunday due to a jail population management plan that went into effect on January 1. Although Sunday is the first day that inmates are being released, the sheriff's office says close to 250 inmates will be released in total. The Jefferson County Sheriff's Office said the jail population management plan was adopted due to a $5.5 million budget reduction. Because of the budget reduction, the sheriff's office is closing one floor of the jail, decreasing the jail's operational capacity from 1,392 beds to 1,148 beds. The sheriff's office says the inmates who will qualify for early release must have served a minimum of 50% of their sentence. Those who would be excluded from early releases will be inmates who have been sentenced to a statutory minimum as provided by Colorado law or have judge-endorsed minimus stating not eligible for emergency release pursuant to the provisions of Chief Judge Directive. Additionally, offenders will only be accepted into the jail if they have charges that require an advisement under the Victim Rights Act, third-degree felony or third-degree felony drug charges and higher, warrant arrest for jailable offenses, and court remands. Sheriff Jeff Schrader says that early release undermines the authority of the judges and the authority of the court. Releasing inmates early before they've completed their full sentence is also not the message we want to send to criminals. Unfortunately, it is an action that we have to take to meet the budgetary constraints we are currently faced with and to maintain a safe environment for those who are incarcerated and our employees who work in the jail. So I just took a look at the Jefferson County budget. And it says forecasted revenues for the 2019 fiscal year are estimated to be $452.2 million. And that's excluding interfund transfers of $107.3 million. It says this represents an increase of 4.2% when compared to the $433.8 million in revenues that were anticipated in 2018. Okay, so we're looking at 452, so almost $560 million dollars as far as their forecasted revenues, and this was last year, so you know it's probably going to be close to that, I would think. And you know, was a whole lot of politics in this because Jefferson County wanted to de-Tabor their Tabor tax refunds, and the voters said no. And Tabor is the Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights. And the voters said no, that you need to ask us if you want to keep those Tabor tax refunds. And I have to ask you, out of almost $560 million in revenues, I am really shocked that they are cutting the sheriff's department by $5.5 million. And I've talked to some different elected officials, and I continue to hear, but Kim, we have more and more demand of public services. Well, I think government's way out of where they're supposed to be. It used to be, Cody, that we had charities and people helping each other. And once we have government step in, then a lot of people say, well, I don't need to give to a charity. I don't need to help my neighbor. I don't need to do that because government will do that. And government is not doing a very good job of that, Cody.
You know, when I read this article, the first thing I thought was, if there ever was a use for taxpayer dollars, it's making sure that the criminals are not affecting, you know, the good society as a whole. right? In California, I think it costs something like $70,000, maybe more, to house an inmate for a year, which is a significant amount. But we've seen this in California quite a bit. You go in, you get out almost the same day or within a few days because they just don't have the capacity to handle it. And it's surprising that it's now arrived on our doorsteps, too. I think most people would want their taxpayers, tax dollars to go towards protecting their community.
Yep. I think so, too. Steve, what do you think?
Well, just now what Cody said, you go in and you go out on the same day. The first thing in my mind was a picture of a jail with a revolving door.
But, let's talk about, though, what's happening down at the State House regarding employers. And so employers are being squeezed. Small businesses are being squeezed all different ways with a forced minimum wage and also with this potential forced paid family leave. Another thing, let's go back to one of these here. This was, let me get to it. It's about in the middle there, Cody. And that is that the Supreme Court, one more time here, the Supreme Court ruled that, here we go, this was from the Colorado Sun, the U.S. Supreme Court has rejected Colorado's appeal in excessive business fines cases that the AG says creates a huge loophole. And this was about a week or so ago. This has been on our headlines for a little while, that the U.S. Supreme Court rejected Colorado's attempt to close what it calls a loophole that allows businesses to avoid some regulatory sanctions by in part saying they're too poor to pay penalties. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser, a Democrat, said the decision could hurt the state's ability to ensure businesses are following regulations and laws. He said under the Supreme Court's decision not to consider the case, businesses will continue to have a huge loophole or even incentive to ignore Colorado's rules for corporate conduct. The case stems from the Colorado Department of Labor's dispute with DAMI Hospitality, which owns the small Star Motel in northeast Denver. The agency fined DAMI $425,000 for letting its workers' compensation insurance coverage lapse for nearly 1,700 days through July of 2014. DAMI appealed the fine, arguing in part that because the business lacked the funds to pay the penalty, the sanction violated the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The Eighth Amendment says excessive bail shall not be required nor excessive fines imposed. The case ended up at the Colorado Supreme Court, which ruled in DAMI's favor despite argument from stated lawyers that the Eighth Amendment applies only to individuals and that a company's ability to pay a penalty should not be weighed as part of excessive fine considerations. Colorado challenged the ruling in the U.S. Supreme Court, but the court declined, it was about a week ago Monday, to take up the case. Daniel Goodwin, an attorney who represented DAMI in the case, said DAMI's owner, Soon Pak, had no idea the workers' compensation insurance had lapsed and that no one was adversely affected as a result. Pak is a Korean immigrant in her 70s who speaks little English and has difficulty understanding technical and legal concepts. Her legal team argued. Now, so we have on one hand that Jefferson County is, because they're not going to budget enough for the sheriff's department, they are letting criminals out early, and then you're making this businesswoman a criminal because she did not keep up her workers' comp, and they fined her an excessive amount. Doesn't seem fair to me, Cody.
Well, they're looking for the criminals who can pay them, right? They're making criminals out of people who have the money to contribute to their coffers.
Wow.
He's pretty wise. He's a millennial, and he's really wise.
What was the word you used a while ago? Voluminous?
Voluminous.
Okay, thank you. That was it.
That is it. So your comment before we go to break, Cody?
Small business owners are being squeezed, no doubt. $425,000 fine is quite a bit for this penalty. We want to protect our workers for sure. But we do have more pressing issues to worry about for sure.
Well, and if this forced paid family leave goes into place, it's going to be the same kind of a thing. And with that, they're calling it a fee instead of a tax so that they don't have to come and ask the people. So, I think that's pretty disingenuous and dishonest right there. But then what that would do is that would put in place a bureaucrat, not an elected official, that could then raise, quote unquote, raise that fee on these businesses. And I had a couple of small business women in, you know, the people that own small businesses. And I said, I wonder how much they want of our money. And they said they want all of it.
You know, when I was taking a class for rehabilitation counseling, this teacher said something that was really profound. He said, how much is enough? And the answer is always, no matter what you're dealing with or who it is, the answer is always just a little bit more.
Before we go to break, though, Super Bowl is right around the corner. Sorry about your Titans.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm from Kansas, so I'm kind of excited about the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, but it's going to be a great game, I think.
At least Tennessee has a team, right?
This is true. This is true. But the place to watch the big game is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. You can join them for the big game, and you'll be entered for a chance to win a 55-inch HD TV. They have these new roasted wings that you can try out while you're watching the Avs and Nuggets as they're working towards that playoff spot. And Wednesday is Dine-In Wing Day. So today, all the wings you can eat for $15.99. And if you don't want to cook, and I don't want to cook tonight, I've got a bunch of people coming over. Steve, I think you might drop by to meet my guest, right?
Yep, and I might drag Jason McBride.
Okay. Well, I am going to have some, I think, barbecue shrimp from Hooters and also some of their great wings. So be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. All of my sponsors are there, my partnership sponsors. And that way you won't have to cook. And I'm not cooking tonight, so let's go to break. When we come back, Cody Hubley is in studio. We'll continue with some headlines in the next break.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. I have in studio with me Cody Hubley. You are one of the members of our writer's circle, and you have a great op-ed. It's going to be on my website, kimmunson.com, later today, and we'll be posting that on Facebook. It's regarding this whole plastic bag thing, and my gosh, what you have uncovered is pretty amazing.
I had no idea what this was going to turn into when I went into it, and I'm really surprised, and I think your listeners will be too.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good stuff. Steve, you are probably the one that is really watching this impeachment thing closely. We'll be into day two today. What's your comments from yesterday?
It was not my intent to get, you know, to sit and watch, but I got hooked. And I guess the thing that really hooked me the most was we've all heard that, you know, the president has lined up a team of his own. And I was hearing most of those guys speak because they spoke right after, you know, one another. And it's like, my gosh, the Dems are the left are, and the impeachment pushers are walking into a meat grinder because these guys were very solid in what they were saying. So I was impressed. But then I hear this morning on my way in that they went to all the way up to one little after 1 a.m. in the morning, you know, East Coast time. Like, wow, there was a long day. And I guess they're going to pick up again today at 1 p.m. For day two. One thing they did do was vote on the rules. And the person reporting in stark comparison said, now, back when the Clinton impeachment, when they voted on the rules, the vote result was 100-0.
Mm-hmm.
They were in agreement on the rules. Not yesterday. Right down the line in terms of party.
Well,
53-47.
And to that point, we had Cheryl Atkinson on yesterday who, you know, she is reopening or restarting her case regarding the Department of Justice and FBI. I think it was. I think it's Department of Justice. It might have been both of them. But anyway, she had been spied on by the U.S. government. And Steve, what I've also learned is many times when people don't want to get to the truth, what they're trying to do is hide behind policy and procedure. And that's why these rules are so important. I think that this vote on the rules, the fact that it was right along party lines instead of with the Clinton impeachment 100-0, I think is somewhat telling is I don't think that they're really trying to get to the truth on this. I think that they're going to try to use policy and procedure, to, I think, muddy the waters a bit.
Right down the line, as we were watching this unfold through December, when the House activities occurred, we knew what was going to happen, that once they ever, got to the end of this circus, they would, come up with their articles. They did. And then the lovely Ms. Pelosi, sat on them for, 30-some days, mm-hmm. whatever that was. But the whole point throughout December is that here's what's going to happen once it goes to the Senate, that, we basically need to have this all wrapped up in a tidy package. But now they're pushing for more witnesses, more documentation, and I don't think that was ever intended. And the Senate is right now, so far, McConnell is holding firm. It's like, you had your chance. That we're going to unpack the package that you gave us, but you don't need to add to it because, what's going to come out of it. And, what McConnell is threatening is he's got his finger on the button that should you turn this into a circus, I'm going to push this button and this will be over.
Well, and, there's that, was it Bob Duco that we had that soundbite that maybe this is actually a strategy to try to keep Bernie off the campaign trail because the Iowa caucuses right around the corner.
It's not probably the main strategy. It's a sub-strategy off to the side that, mm-hmm. By the way, if we do the trial, all the senators have to come in off the campaign trail, mm-hmm. trail, and obviously that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, if we're going to stick it to Bernie like we did in 2016, we can do it again.
I do hear that many of Bernie's followers would not be real excited about that. Quickly, Christy Whaley texted me. She said she was pretty sure that soundbite was from his Time for Choosing, his speech endorsing Goldwater in the 60s. So that's where it looks like that came from, that Ronald Reagan soundbite that we had earlier today. But pulling Bernie off of the campaign trail, it's an interesting strategy, but they're pulling off Klobuchar and Warren as well. And the other thing I find interesting, Cody, is that some of these senators have basically been pushing impeachment. They've already made their decision before even hearing any of the evidence. And that's not the way it's supposed to work in America.
Well, I think their decision was made before impeachment ever started. But you're right. Does it have to do with pulling Bernie off the campaign trail? Several weeks ago we heard Hillary Clinton say that Tulsi Gabbard was a Russian asset. Oh, and by the way, Jill Stein too. And now she's coming out with a clip from an interview where she says nobody likes Bernie. People don't want to work with him. Just a real flippant comment about him. So when you think something like, well, could that really be possible? Could they have implemented this in a way to pull someone off the campaign trail? I don't think anything's beyond them.
I don't think that, and to that point, there's one other headline I wanted to hit here. This was from CBS News, and Planned Parenthood has launched a $45 million investment in the 2020 election. It says, as abortion supporters brace for another year of restrictions and court battles, Planned Parenthood is throwing its weight into the 2020 elections. Planned Parenthood launched the biggest electoral effort in its history, a $45 million spend to support presidential, congressional, and state-level candidates in the 2020 elections who support abortion rights. Jenny Lawson, the Planned Parenthood Votes executive director, said the stakes have never been higher. The Trump administration has managed to undo so much over the last 3 years, Lawson said in an exclusive interview with CBS News. The fact that this summer the Supreme Court might gut Roe v. Wade is an indicator of their intention, and they've never been so bold. Planned Parenthood's electoral efforts, which the group has dubbed We Decide 2020, hope to reach 5 million voters in 9 battleground states: Arizona, Colorado, Florida, Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. My two questions. Is Planned Parenthood, I thought was a nonprofit, and I didn't think nonprofits were supposed to be involved in elections like this. And secondly, Planned Parenthood typically gets, I think, about $500 million from the United States government. So how is it that we are using our tax dollars to give to an entity that's then going out to try to influence elections? Cody?
It's not just Planned Parenthood. You see this with a lot of the immigration organizations, right? They take the money that they get from the government to then go and sue the government or, you know, lobby against the government, against the immigration policies that voters really wanted. You know, I think when it comes to Planned Parenthood, their truth was revealed recently when they fired their president, who came into her office and said, you know, we're not going to focus on abortion anymore. We're going to focus on women's health. They didn't like that, did they? And they fired her very quickly and wanted to silence her, too. But she's spoken out. She seems to be a good person who's got a real grasp of the situation. And if anybody has any doubts about Planned Parenthood, I think you just need to look at what she has to say because she's got the insider knowledge.
Boy, you are so informed. I love that. I think that there is a shift that is happening regarding the abortion situation here in America. I think that people are starting to realize that we've basically aborted a whole generation of babies. And I'm finding that as people realize during the procedure that the baby can feel pain, and, you know, I think that we're starting to see a shift in that. And Juliana Day is trying to get on the ballot this November, no late-term abortions here in Colorado. So nothing after 22 weeks. And that just seems to me like a compassionate, important thing to do. And so be sure and check that out. I think it's due date too late. And if you want to sign her petitions or help her out with that, I think she would really appreciate that. Steve, your comment?
Yeah, but before you get to Jason, I think I was telling you about this yesterday or the day before. The Women's March was last weekend in Washington on the national level and probably several places, probably in every state. One of the conservative media people took their camera crew down there, and the man on the street, in this case woman on the street, was asking this question of women as they were passing by. Do you know the number one killer of women, or no, I'm sorry, let me get my words right. Do you know the number one killer of females in the United States? Well, the guesses were all over the map, heart, this, this, and that. And the one lady said, oh, well, it must be cardiac issues. She says, no, that's number two. Well, the lady was baffled. Well, what's number one? And she said, abortion. And the lady just totally, I mean, oh, that's a totally different mindset. I thought, how in the world can you that easily push aside what's really being said and just say that's just a different mindset?
Mm-hmm. Now, and we need to engage in these conversations, but that mindset has been really pushed for many, many years. So anyway, I don't think that Planned Parenthood should be receiving government money like it is. And you know, I need to back up just a little bit before we get to Jason. And that is that, you know, Cody, if you look at it, there's you know, let's say there's 60 million women out there that have had an abortion. And I think that there may be things on their heart that it hurts. Let me just put it that way. And so I think Planned Parenthood says, oh, those conservatives, they're judging you. And when I think many times people are judging themselves, sometimes the things, you know, that we hold inside ourselves. And I do think that we need to, as Christians, acknowledge this with compassion, that, you know, there is forgiveness in this. But as a society, we cannot be paying, as a society, using tax dollars to fund abortions. That's where I'm at on that.
Sure. There might be a very small subset of women who are using abortions as birth control, but for the most part, women who have to even consider this decision are struggling in their lives, and it's a very challenging decision that will live with them forever, even if they never speak about it again. What we can do as a society, as a government, is make sure that these women have an unjudgmental resource to get them through this process and maybe provide them resources so that they can find a way to keep this child or find a good family for it where they don't have to make that terrible decision.
That is truly, truly, I think, the answer. Jason, I know that this is a subject that's near and dear to your heart as well. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management.
Well, good morning, Kim. Boy, you guys are going very deep today.
Yes, we are.
But yes, I can't disagree with anything that I heard from you. I think, you know, what Steve talked about is pretty telling. You know, when it's posed to you like that, I would think a little more thoughtful reflection might be in order rather than just a, you know, a bumper sticker type comment and a dismissal of
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the idea that Planned Parenthood gets so much money from the government, and then they're using that now. They're going to go out and use that or put that into different elections. And so, you know, when we talk about Donald Trump and this impeachment, I mean, why go through this impeachment right now? I mean, the election is going to be later this year. I think their concern is that he's going to win. And so the strategy is to, you know, create all of this, I think, chaos over here with the impeachment, maybe, you know, pull Bernie off the campaign trail. But then they're going to try to pick off what they think are vulnerable senators. And so Colorado is in the crosshairs on that. And so it really will be important to support Cory Gardner here in Colorado, because I think the strategy is to try to pick off these vulnerable senators, take the Senate, then they will impeach him, you know, I think in a kangaroo court. But Jason, that wasn't what we were going to talk about today. What's on your mind?
You know, I didn't send you a subject today, so it's fine, Kim. You know, I just wanted to discuss kind of the thought of, you know, the market has had a tremendous rise when we go all the way back to the bottom in 2009. And as we discussed Monday, Kim, it may not be overextended right now. It may go much, much higher, but again, you never know when the next big pullback may be coming. It always seems to surprise everybody until after it's happened, of course. Then all the experts can explain exactly why.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, if you've had large gains, and eventually this money is for retirement at some point, and you want to create a paycheck, I just think it's prudent to think about maybe taking some of your gains off the table and placing them into something that's safe, something that provides income, that guarantees income. And yeah, Kim, I'm talking about the horrible, dreaded annuity word, perhaps with part of the money. If you don't have a pension at work and you're going to be depending on only Social Security and then all of your investments to provide you with income and retirement, well, Social Security is not going to provide, you know, a huge chunk of that. And how much of your retirement income do you want coming from sources that could be very volatile or not guaranteed? So, Kim, I'm not afraid to say the annuity word. I think that some of them are very, very good, especially if the person that's buying them understands how they work and why they're doing it. There just really isn't anything else that'll provide, you know, a guaranteed paycheck month after month after month as long as you live, and remove that money from the worries of the volatility of just about any other investment out there. And it's much better to, quote, monetize that when your money's up high than to wait until things get bad and then do it in a panic when you have less capital available to do so.
Okay, so in a way, you could create your own pension, right?
You know, I mean, use part of your money to... Yes, that's a great way to put it.
Okay.
It's a little bit more flexible than an actual pension, but that's a fantastic way to put it, Kim, a do-it-yourself pension.
Okay, well, I would highly recommend that people sit down with you, Jason, and your team over there at Presidential Wealth Management. The phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And our landing page together is airpresidential.com, all kinds of great information there. Jason, thanks so much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Have a great show, Kim.
You bet. And when we come back, Cody Hubley, what you have done on this, going into this whole plastic ban, and you said, you know, you said you came at this with no preconceived conclusions or decisions, and it is fascinating what you have put together. Your op-ed will be on our website later today. That's KimMunson.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, one of our Writer's Circle authors, Cody Hubley. Stay tuned.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Thrilled to have in studio with me, Cody Hubley. Cody, you've done this very good op-ed. A ban on bags is bad biopolicy. Say that fast three times. So tell me about this. You know, when we were talking about different subjects, and I think next month we'll talk about student loans. You're going to bite that off.
All right.
But this is pretty amazing. So take us through this.
Yeah, so we came about this article because I just mentioned to you that out of the last several weeks, you know, the news stories about this plastic bag ban really seemed to fire up people on social media. I didn't know it was a very significant issue. I mean, I thought, well, if 10 cents will save the world, hey, maybe I'm for it. But I use reusable bags. I shop at Costco and Sam's. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm one of the people that has to buy bags for, you know, trash bag liners or for picking up dog waste. So I really went in this with an open mind, and I just wanted to get at the truth and figure out what's the role of this in middle-class Americans' lives. How is this going to affect us? So I guess if we tell you what the bill is, Kendra Black of Denver City Council and the president, Joel and Clark, sponsored this bill. It came up for a vote twice in order to get passed, and it passed with unanimous consent. So not one single person on the city council said, hey, maybe this is a bad idea. What this bill actually does is in July of this year, you will be charged 10 cents per bag, paper or plastic, doesn't matter. 10 cents per bag, even if you get groceries delivered to your house in bags, you're going to be charged 10 cents per bag. 4 cents of that goes to the stores. They can spend that how they want, or it could just be profit. And 6 cents of this 10-cent fee goes to Denver, mostly for administrative costs.
Well, on that note, though, this is, again, this is something that businesses will have to have staff to, you know, so they're probably, it's probably not going to be a profit thing for them.
I think it will be very challenging to keep up with this. I'm wondering about the logistics. How do you manage the bags? Hey, someone count the bags. Hey, I'm getting overcharged for the bags. You know, it's definitely going to be an issue. So 13 cities in Colorado have already done this. It kind of started in the little ritzy mountain towns, Aspen, Telluride, Boulder. The fees range from 10 cents to a quarter in these other cities. Eight states in the United States now, as 2020 goes on, will have banned plastic bags on a statewide level. And Colorado wants to do that as well. But the first thing they have to do coming up in this 2020 legislative session is they've got to repeal a 1993 block that was put in place so that local municipalities couldn't ban that. And that's why they didn't do a ban here. They had to do a fee because they couldn't ban it because of that law already on the books, right?
Okay.
So I guess the other thing we can talk about before we figure out, are these 500 billion plastic bags that we're using a real problem, you know? We can talk about why Tabor didn't protect us in this.
Okay.
You know, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights says that, hey, we should get a say in these new fees, right? We've got to vote on it occasionally, so why didn't we get to vote on this?
So just a question, because I've looked at this. This is, so now the in Colorado, there is this, it's, let's see, what was it, 20, what number was it?
20-010.
Okay, got it. And so it is trying to get rid of this 1993 law that basically said no unit of local government shall require or prohibit the use or sale of specific types of plastic materials or products or restrict or mandate containers, packaging, or labeling for any consumer product. So were these plastic ban bags basically illegal, in your opinion,
Yeah, so that's absolutely the case. In fact, Kendra Black said, hey, we wanted to do a ban, but we couldn't because of that law that's the Colorado law that's on the book. So we had to go with a fee.
Okay, I got you. I'm with you now. Okay.
Yeah. So the ban, the fee, it's all the same thing. They don't want you to use plastic bags anymore.
You're supposed to get your stuff home.
Exactly. And are there better alternatives? The answer is really surprising. So Tabor, unfortunately, can't protect us about this. Like I mentioned, this has come up in 13 Colorado cities before. Aspen started this in 2011, and one citizens group sued. The lower courts rejected their lawsuit several times. Finally, the Colorado Supreme Court took this case up in 2018 to decide, hey, is this a fee or a tax, right? And so they decided that, well, if you're going to use some of these costs for waste management, then we'll consider it a fee and not a tax. Three justices dissented and said, hey, this fee actually is a tax because this is going to affect the general population. And so that's what's really interesting about Tabor is that they've been able to get around Tabor by just saying, you know, as long as this doesn't affect the general population, as long as it only affects the people paying the fee, then we can do this. We can pass this new tax and call it a fee. So in reality, they can pass taxes and use the money for their own administrative costs. So they can just pass taxes to create government and keep that process going.
But they call it a fee.
That's right. They call it a fee. But a rose by any other name smells as sweet, right? So, unfortunately, it looks like Tabor is not going to protect us.
That's Colorado's taxpayers' bill mm-hmm. of rights, and they're doing everything they can to circumvent that.
Right. And ironically, Tabor was passed in 1992. This Senate bill or this bill that we were talking about just a minute ago that banned local municipalities from putting these bans in place, really, just came out the year later. So they were one on top of the other. Mm-hmm. So I think what was fascinating about this mostly is, you know, now we know about how they passed it. We know that it was unanimous. But will it do anything? Will it do anything to solve the problem, right? So let's go to the EPA, who said the current EPA data shows that plastic bag waste is a very small part of the municipal waste stream. The EPA says that plastic bags are less than half of 1%. So it's not 99.5% of the problem that they're worried about, right? So what about Denver? What did Denver say since this is a local bill? In 2013, Denver's own Office of Sustainability said in a report that, quote, putting a fee on bags would have a minuscule impact on helping Denver reduce the amount of waste to its landfills. And that's their own study. That's their own government study, right? So we know now from the federal government, we know from local government that this isn't going to do anything. So why are we doing it? You know, why make this tax so important? There is a crisis with plastic, and we'll talk about that. But this isn't going to do anything about it. So when we talk about the crisis, which I think is important, because there's a lot of people who are like me who would say, well, 10 cents is a small cost to pay if we can clean up the world, right? There's a real problem. Is it the 500 billion plastic bags that we're using? It turns out, no, it's not. 95% of the trash in all of the seas comes from just 10 rivers. 8 of those are in Asia, 5 of them specifically in China, and the other 2 are in Africa, right? So it's just 10 rivers that are providing basically all the pollution in the ocean. And China is responsible for about 55% of the plastic that goes in the oceans. In fact, when we were sending our recycling to China, if they couldn't use it, they would just toss it in their rivers and send it out to the ocean. So that's the reality. So is it our plastics, though? Is it our plastics that's causing the problem? Well, one of these ocean nonprofit organizations that really has a good incentive to help clean this up and are passionate about this issue, they sent some drones out and some boats into this thing called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, basically like a continent-sized mass of swirling plastic in the ocean, just collected there because of ocean currents. So they said it's about 352 million tons of trash. It turns out that 46% of that, which is a good representation of the plastic in the ocean, 46% of this plastic in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is just fishing nets. The rest of it could be our plastic bags. Nope. The rest of it is also fishing stuff, too. It's fishing gear like eel traps and oyster spacers and crates and baskets and ropes. So most of the plastic in the ocean is not consumer plastic. The bags, the straws, the styrofoam has nothing to do with this problem that we're facing. And placing a ban on plastic bags here, just like Denver said, just like the EPA said, is not going to do anything to improve our environment. It's just going to tax middle-class Americans.
Okay, you know what? Let's stop right there, Cody Hubley. This is fascinating. Let's go to break. When we come back, let's continue with this information that you have uncovered. And it's not about the environment, is it?
It's not about the environment. And there are some alarming quotes from our politicians and bureaucrats that I think will really open, you know, your listeners' eyes to what's going on here.
Okay. This is Kim Munson. We're going to go to break. I have Cody Hubley in studio with me. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. There's we have our show recaps and the podcasts and everything are there. And sign up for my email newsletter that we will let you know who will be our guest the next week. And Cody Hubley, you are in studio. You're a millennial, so it's great to have your perspective here. And I was thinking, I met somebody yesterday, and he's trying to bring people together to talk about different ideas. And he said, I try to get people from all different age groups. And I said, Cody's coming in tomorrow, and I'm so excited about that. But you said something in the last break that I'm like, where did you find this? And you called it the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. You said there's 350 million tons of trash there, and 46% of it is fishing nets alone. But you said when you first read that, you had to do more research to find out if it was true.
Yeah, I did. I read it in another news article. And I just read that it's not consumer waste. It's mostly fishing waste. And I thought, could that be true, you know? So I looked it up, and I found the PDF document from this nonprofit. And I'll find their name, and we can even put the PDF up on your website. But it was an ocean, you know, preservation nonprofit that went out and did this, that sent boats in and collected the trash to observe what it is. And a lot of people have done this on a smaller scale. Theirs was the most recent study, and theirs really came up with the most shocking statistics that this is not consumer waste that's in the oceans. It is mostly fishing waste, giant commercial fishing operations that just, hey, we're done with the nets, let's dump them in. And you can imagine this isn't just a plastic problem anymore. These are literally things designed to catch sea animals that are just being discarded into the ocean where there were sea animals before. So, you know, that was something that surprised me, is that it's not consumer waste. So, you know, as we go through this and you see what's going to come up next, they're not going to stop here with just plastic bags. They're going to go to straws. They're going to go to styrofoam. They're going to go to lots of things that won't make any impact on this.
But why, Cody, why? Why do you think they're doing this?
That's a question that that's hard to answer. I think the best thing is to look at their own words, right? So let's start on a national level. July 2019, something that most people know about, the Green New Deal. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's chief of staff, who, by the way, now has been fired after a federal elections commission thing where he funneled $1 million to a couple of private companies. But anyway, he recruited her, he trained her, he financed her. He said about the Green New Deal, he was talking to this Washington State climate director. He said the interesting thing about the Green New Deal is it wasn't originally a climate thing at all. Do you guys think of it as a climate thing? Because we really think of it as a how do you change the entire economy thing. It's not about the environment. It is about the economy. And he dropped the bomb right there and revealed it. So that's one. But let's go a little bit further. So when, this bill was co-sponsored by Denver City Council President Jolyn Clark, he said he envisions a war on plastics. And he says it's an overdue war. And all of this kind of stuff is just the first step. When people start to get used to this kind of thing, you'll see it isn't just one and done. He says straws and styrofoam are next. That was in the Denver Post. What about the former chief sustainability officer, Denver? Now, this is the office that said that a fee on plastic bags would have a minuscule impact. So this guy is the former chief sustainability officer, but now he is a consultant to the city as well. He said, quote, it may not move the trash numbers all that much, but it's getting people into that mindset. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's not about what it's going to do or about this solving any problem. It's about changing the populace so that they're more subservient to these ideas. If we go a little bit further, March 2019, as Mayor Hancock was at an election forum trying to get reelected, he said, quote, within a year, we'll be moving towards the pay as you throw. This was an idea he presented in his first year in office, and he's ready to bring it back now that he thinks that the climate has shifted on these ideas that people realize that there is a problem, and he thinks that they can just do this. So what is pay as you throw? That chief sustainability officer said, I'd rather refer to it as free to be green, you know, as instead of pay as you throw. But basically right now, Denver residents' trash service is included in the other taxes that they pay to Denver. They want to pull that out and start charging a monthly fee. Charlotte Pitt, who was the interim director of solid waste management for Denver, said, we've been moving in this direction for quite some time. She wouldn't tell you the cost, but she did share some research on other pay-as-you-throw cities. Up in Lafayette, they're paying $31 a month for trash. In Fort Collins, it's $34 a month. Other cities like Austin, Texas, and Portland, Oregon, it's more than $40 a month. So you can see that even though this bill, this 10 cents per bag, people might ignore it because it's small, but it did annoy them. For other people, they thought, hey, yeah, 10 cents is a great price if we can clean up the oceans, right? And it's not going to do either of those things. It's not going to help us here locally. It's not going to help us on a global level. What it does is get people into the idea of being taxed for the environment, but it's really about controlling the economy. It's really about getting more revenue to create more government programs, to create more control, to create more taxes. It's just a vicious cycle, and they are using our fears of our planet declining. We can look around and see trash. It's not some sort of abstract concept like climate change. We can recognize pollution in the oceans. We know it's in every animal. It's in our bodies. It's everywhere, right? We know that there is a problem, and people want to do something about it, but they're using, you know, our notion of being good stewards of the earth to pass these taxes that don't do anything but create revenue for the city.
Well, the other thing about it is it seems like folks that have that mindset, it's always a zero-sum game. They don't think about the creativity and innovation of mankind. And I mean, I think there's different ways to address these problems. I think with creativity and innovation, we can probably come up with some pretty good ideas on how to address this. And so if they were real serious, first of all, if they were really serious about it, then they might be wanting to have conversations with China and India about what they are doing. But this is about controlling everyday hardworking people. And just think about it. If you don't have any kids, you don't have any disposable diapers that you know, may be throwing away, a family's going to have a lot more trash. And so they're going to be dinged more, right, if you start to get in a pay-as-you-throw kind of thing. Or let's say that you have a home business. And so you're home all day instead of out and about. You might have more trash. So I see this as a way that ultimately it's going to constrain people from living the lives that they want to live.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I wondered, you know, with the city council and unanimous consent on this bill, did they not look up places that have already done this? You know, this has already been passed in 32 countries around the world, other states. You know, the UK government found you have to use a cotton bag 131 times to even equal the environmental impact of just one of those little plastic bags. If someone were to use their plastic bag as a trash can liner just once, you'd have to use your reusable cotton bag 327 times to make it just as sustainable as that one plastic bag. A paper bag, you'd have to use it 3 times to get the equivalent environmental impact of just that one plastic bag. In 2018, the Danish government looked at a lot more statistics. They looked at more ways these bags are produced and the impact on the environment. And they said, if you want to go buy those trendy organic cotton totes, you've got to use it 20,000 times to equal the environmental impact of one plastic bag. You know, more than that, we can look at real-world data where this has actually been rolled out and see what's happened. In 2019, Greenpeace looked at the data from 2017 all the way through 2019 in the UK, and they found that instead, as the UK, you know, instituted a 5-pence charge on single-use bags, and they wanted people to buy bags for life, people did buy them, but they threw them away just like regular bags. And the plastic footprint of the UK of these stores that were studied actually increased by 18,739 tons. In California in 2016, an economist looked at their numbers and said, hey, yeah, you are using less bags. But the reality is people have to go out and buy trash can liners. They have to buy dog waste bags. And the bags that they're buying are heavier. So you can't just look at the numbers when these cities say, hey, we've reduced our number of bags by 30% or 80%. You've got to look at the plastic weight, because the bags that replace them are more costly to produce and they're heavier materials. So you actually end up using more plastic, and it doesn't change people's behavior. The people who are reusing and recycling are going to do it. The people who aren't used to doing that are going to throw away their reusable bags, which are even more costly to the environment.
Well, and I think most people do reuse their plastic bags. If I don't reuse them, I recycle them because there's places that you can do that. And how about we have an educated free market answer to this? So if I need a bag, I appreciate it that the business person can give me a bag, you know, to take my food home. If I'm busy, I don't really like to take a dirty bag into the grocery store.
In fact, the University of Arizona found that 50%, a little more than 50% of these reusable bags contain E. coli. There's a lot of cross-contamination and people aren't disinfecting their bags. It's not something I do either. I didn't realize how dangerous that was. But it's a real problem. I think it was a Cincinnati hospital or something that found that these reusable bags are actually dirtier than your toilet seat.
Oh, I don't think I wanted to know that, but you
right.
know. and then people are dragging those back into the grocery store.
Yeah.
And then, it's probably not that clean. So, Cody Hubley, this has gone really quickly. Your op-ed will be on our website later today. That's KimMunson.com. We'll be pushing this out via Facebook. Appreciate all of the great research that you've done on this. And so next month you'll be back again, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Greatly appreciate it. And be sure and check all this out. The research that you have done on this piece is really, really important. And as you mentioned, this is not about saving the environment. This is about controlling how we live our lives, and that is not the proper role of government.
No.
Okay, so Cody Hubley, great to have you here. Our quote for today, let me get to it here, is James Madison. And he said, "There are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations." I thought that was pretty appropriate for our conversation today, Cody.
Insightful.
Okay. And so today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. So today, engage in conversation, get your brain around these issues, and engage in the battle of ideas out there. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Fast on a rough road, riding high through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning.